You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Hi, listeners. We wanted to provide a content warning for this episode because the movie, as well as our discussion, involves things like stalking, spousal abuse, physical assault, and violence toward women, just so everyone is aware. Enjoy the episode.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Jamie.
Caitlin.
Take a look into my telescope.
Okay.
And observe from a distance the movie Body Double and how it asks us to be empathetic toward a protagonist who is...
Okay, we're starting negative.
A creep.
We're starting really negative. We're coming in
freezing cold.
I'm sorry. I can't stop looking at... So my dog is here right now. I want to just say at the top... First of all, welcome to the Bechdel cast.
Welcome.
Second of all, you know, this movie is going to be an interesting chat. Third of all, Sonny's here. And I got him a couple tennis balls because
you're a good mommy.
I just like to give him things, but they're squeaky. I didn't realize they were squeaky. And he wouldn't stop barking at me until I gave him all four. So there might be some squeaks. he has them all. He's arranged them into a little diamond and he just keeps looking at them lustfully.
Whoa.
And then occasionally he'll pick one up in his mouth and squeak it and then put it back and then rearrange the diamond formation. It's kind of sick and perverted. It's because I showed him Body Double.
Well, I was going to say, speaking of looking at things lustfully.
Yeah, I know. He learned it. He said, I learned it from my boy De Palma. Horrifying. Okay. Welcome to the Bechdel cast. My name is Jamie Loftus.
My name is Caitlin Durante, and this is our show where we examine movies through an intersectional feminist lens, and we use the Bechdel test simply as a jumping off point to inspire a larger conversation about flims,
if you will.
What is the Bechdel test, though, Jamie? I forget.
Well, the Bechdel test is a movie, or no, it's a oh my god, it's a media metric created by queer cartoonist Alison Bechdel, sometimes called the Bechdel-Wallace test. Lots of versions of it. Ours requires that two people of a marginalized gender speak to each other about something other than a man for more than two lines of dialogue at very least, and they must have names in the and it should be a meaningful interaction. Can I give a quick anecdote example?
Please.
There is a really annoying Twitter joke that is recycled every time a new movie comes out where they're like, I'm sorry to report, like, Top Gun Maverick does not pass the Bechdel test, and it gets 5 trillion likes every time, and it's never funny, and it annoys me. And it particularly annoyed me yesterday when someone recycled that joke yet again to say Minions Rise of Gru does not pass the Bechdel test. Now, listen, I went to see Minions Rise of Gru last night, opening night, and it does pass the Bechdel test. So not only have we been saying for years it's a flawed metric to begin with and plenty of incredible movies, do not pass the Bechdel test, mm-hmm. but it is a good jumping off point for discussion, perhaps. Minions did pass the Bechdel test between Julie Andrews and Taraji P. Henson. And if that's not a super pass, I don't know what fucking is.
Tell me about it.
Oh, my God. Huh. So that's the show. And today we are talking about a pretty popular request that we've gotten over the years many times. It's a Brian De Palma movie called Body Double. It came out in 1984. Mm-hmm. It's a neo-noir erotic thriller, and people have been saying it's sexist since it came out. Woo! So, and if something is sexist in 1984, I'm very excited to talk about it now.
Yes.
And we have an incredible returning guest. Wait, is this a three? Is this a four?
I think your third time.
Aladdin, Speed. Was there something in between? There was something in between, I think. I think this might be four. I just can't remember the other one. Maybe three. I don't know. I don't know time.
Mm. Aladdin, Speed, and Body Double is a pretty solid genre spread, too.
Yeah. Well, let's introduce you properly. They are a filmmaker, half of the podcast Ethnically Ambiguous. It's Shireen Lani Yunez.
Woo! Welcome back.
Thanks for having me. I have been curious about this movie for so long, so I was glad to have a reason to watch it. I don't know what I was expecting, because I don't like knowing anything about a movie before I jump in. Like, I know I want to see it, but I just will not look anything up about it. So it was a ride. I did not know what I was getting into. It was a...
So you had never seen this before?
No.
Okay, I was fascinated about, like, what if you had a history with
it. I've
just
always heard about it.
Are you, like, a De Palma fan?
I mean, not necessarily. I think he's, like, he's not untalented. I think he's...
Yeah.
He makes it clear, especially in this movie, that he's just horny all the time. But but I just like that the poster is also really, like, erotic. And, like, I've just heard so much about this movie for some reason. Like, maybe on Letterboxd and stuff. I always saw it pop up. And I was like, what is this? And then someone described it as the hottest thriller of the 80s, or the sexiest thriller of the 80s. So I was like, that piqued my interest. But, but yeah, I don't have any history with it other than being just, like, very curious about it. And now I know.
Me either. I had never seen this movie either. It was, like, vaguely on my radar. But I will say that erotic thrillers are one of my least favorite genres, so I never seek them out. And Brian De Palma, I'm not a fan. There, I said it. I don't like really any of his movies.
We've covered two De Palma movies on this show before. We've covered Mission Impossible 1 and we've covered Carrie. Mm-hmm. But he also did Scarface.
Which,
The Untouchables. Oh, I do like Blowout with...
Oh, I've never seen that.
Me either.
John Travolta. It's maybe my favorite John Travolta performance. I would recommend Blowout. Out of all the De Palma movies, I would recommend.
Even over Face Off, which I think is John Travolta's.
Wait, is that a De Palma movie?
No. But that's John Travolta giving
Travolta.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Face Off is closest I've ever come to converting to Scientology easily. You're just like, maybe he's got a point, because
I love that movie. It's one of my top five movies of all time. I love that movie.
Oh my gosh.
But I would recommend maybe second then. I would recommend it for his second best performance, Blowout. In that movie, I'm like, oh, he's a good actor. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
So Caitlin, you had not seen it before.
I had not. Had you?
I had not. No, I think we all kind of had a similar experience where I've been hearing about this movie for years and I just sort of wasn't in a rush to see it. Honestly, the main selling point for me on this movie was I really like Melanie Griffith, and I am always down to see Melanie Griffith in a movie.
Yes.
And I thought she did a great job. And I'm always just like, sometimes seeing Melanie Griffith in, like, movies in the 80s, you're just like, we're not giving her the material that she needs. And it took a generation. And now her daughter, Dakota Johnson, is doing a lot of incredible work that Melanie Griffith should have had access to as well. Mm-hmm. Anyways, some of the only good nepotism in the world, as far as I'm concerned. Like, that legacy, oof.
Agree.
Amazing.
Agree.
But I knew that this movie had been controversial for a really long time. And Sunny, that is really enough. I didn't know any of, like, Shireen, like, similar deal. I didn't know the plot. I didn't know anything.
No,
I didn't
nothing.
Know that it starred a Bill Maher doppelganger that was really distracting.
It is so distracting.
Especially with his hair slicked back. when he was like playing the producer person with his hair slicked back, that's Bill Maher.
I don't know anything about this guy. He's been nominated for a Golden Globe. Like,
wow,
God bless, good for Craig Wasson.
Who's that?
I mean, look, we don't know. He could be a terrific guy. We don't know.
Yeah.
The point is, he looks exactly like someone despicable, and it's like really distracting.
Despicable Me. Shout out to our Despicable Me episode on the Matreon.
You guys, I loved Rise of Gru so much. It was so funny. They made a joke about LaGuardia Airport that was, the Minions essentially, look, they fly a plane in this one, and it's so funny.
Okay, we cannot get into the Minions.
So I'm like kind of ambivalent towards De Palma. I think that like his place in like movie history is kind of interesting, because he's like,
yeah,
grouped in with all those famous 70s directors, and he's kind of one of the less discussed of them. Like the,
but
whatever,
also,
Scorsese,
like, still quite
Coppola.
Discussed.
He's still very discussed, but I feel like it's not, well, I don't want to dump in him too much, but like, I feel like, it's not discussed because his movies are like so fucking awesome.
Sure.
He's just discussed.
Yeah.
I liked Carrie. Like, I know that I haven't revisited our episode or the movie in a while, but I mean, Carrie really stuck with me when I was younger. I remember enjoying Phantom of the Paradise, but I like watched it when I was sick a couple of years ago. Mm. And other than that, I kind of don't have a, and then, you know, Mission Impossible. Sure. Why not?
Scarface? You ever see Scarface?
Scarface. Yes.
I have not seen Scarface. That's one of my like, right up there with I've not seen a single Godfather, and like
Scarface is something that we will have to cover eventually, and I dread the day that we cover Scarface.
He made Scarface right before Body Double, which is really interesting to me, because they're they feel completely different, but
Well, also he didn't write Scarface.
No, he didn't. No, I realized, like, as I was talking, like, for Body Double, it said story by De Palma, and then he wrote it with someone else. Mm-hmm. But this movie is, I mean, the music, first of all, very dramatic, like, peeping music. Like, every time you saw the telescope, it was, like, this ethereal, weird music. And then, like, there was just, it was, the music kind of scared me at times. I was not expecting so much, like.
It was manipulative.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't like this movie. And I like,
no,
it's kind of,
yeah,
like,
it's, that's okay.
I didn't like it. And it was like, it's weird too, because it was like one of those movies that it has been so, like, people didn't like it when they came out. And they're like, this is a weird Hitchcock ripoff that is like even worse to women somehow. And and then that was it for a while. And then people were trying to like reclaim it. They're like, no, it's commentary. And then I'm like,
no,
I couldn't get there. I couldn't get
it's
there.
Like, it's like horny Hitchcock.
Right.
Right. And it's like, Hitchcock also famously not a good person.
Right.
Yeah.
I've got some quotes for after we do the recap, but like, I just was sort of, because this movie has undergone so many like rounds of analysis, and like some people have, I think, like, you know, whatever, like think whatever you want, but like tried to reclaim it as like, this movie is commentary on voyeurism. It's not just voyeurism. And I looked to see if De Palma had ever like given an interview to try to make that same case. And he sort of like did not at all. He's like, this is what happens in movies. Like, bye. You know? And so we'll get to like the exact particulars of what he has said about the movie. But I just, looking for his thoughts on this movie didn't really change my opinion of it in any way.
Mm-hmm. I thought it would be, honestly, because it's been talked about so much, I thought it would be better. Like, I thought it would be significantly better than it was. Mm-hmm. And that's why I asked to watch it, because I was like, oh, finally this reason to watch this long ass movie that I've heard so much about. It's probably decent. Let's go. And I will say, I think it was, I'm glad we watched it, because there are a few lines that might be like my favorite lines in cinema of all time that I just can't stop thinking about. There's,
ooh, like what? Which ones?
When he's in the acting class and the guy's like, you are a baby and you're afraid and you must act. And then he goes, I can't, I'm a sardine. Like, I just lost it. Like, it was the stupidest line I've ever heard in my entire life. I can't, I'm a sardine. And then it's just like, you are a baby. And I was like, I hear that. I feel that in my bones.
I mean.
But other than that, I mean, I also love Melanie Griffith. I think she also deserved more, just to be not as sexualized and not as just like pigeonholed as she was. But
also, yeah, she's like top billed, but she doesn't come into the movie until like an hour or more.
Yeah.
But it's also like, who are you going to top bill? Craig Wesson? Who the fuck is that?
Who? So, okay, should I... Well, let's take a quick break first, and then we'll get into the recap.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
And we are back, and should we get into the recap and go from there?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so, body double. We meet Jake Scully, played by Craig Wasson.
Which, okay, first of all, Avatar, Jake Sully, body double, Jake Scully.
Yeah.
Distracting.
I was like, for a moment, I was like, is that Sully's name in Monsters, Inc., and then it's not. No, Sully has a different first name.
Because it sounded familiar.
James Sullivan.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I was like, but who's Jake Sully? And then I didn't investigate further, but yes, Jamie, you're right.
Look, we don't have time to get into Avatar right now, and we will be covering it later in the year. It's a complicated film with a bizarro fucking history. But Jake Sully, like, and they say his name 5 trillion times.
Yeah,
in that
movie. They do.
That's like arguably the only thing I remember is the tail scene and the fact that there's a character named Jake Sully.
Jake Sully.
So Jake Scully.
Jake Scully.
That's on James Cameron.
Yeah, he should have named his character basically the same thing.
Yeah.
But we meet Jake Scully. He is an actor in Hollywood. Ever heard of it?
He goes to an iconic hot dog stand that no longer exists at the beginning of the movie called Tale of the Pup.
Okay.
Whose history I cover in my hot dog book.
Oh, nice.
It's like that hot dog shaped building at the beginning of the movie, and it's been moved to like, it still exists, but they just like moved the building to like a storage unit, but it's still around.
Huh.
There's just not hot dogs in it anymore. Anyways, wow. LA history. We were talking about LA history a lot in Speed, too.
That's true.
Yeah. I mean, they're a little bit cringe sometimes, but I do appreciate like a very, not appreciate, I think those meta movies, like you're suddenly on a movie set. I think those are kind of funny, you know what I mean? Where they're lightly hired to be filmed by the crew. I just think that's like very funny to me for some reason.
Yeah.
So this was the opening to this was entertaining. I was like, I've never seen that before. Yeah.
Barney's Beanery? Hello.
Yeah.
Because what happens is so we meet Jake Scully when he is in the middle of filming a take for a vampire movie where he is the vampire and he's in a coffin, but he freezes and can't act because we'll learn that he has claustrophobia. So he's struggling with that. We then see Jake out of his vampire makeup, and it is now clear that he is a dead ringer for Bill Maher, and again, it's very distracting.
Which, I don't even know if that was a person at the time. Like, I know he was alive, but yeah. I'm like, I don't even think he was famous when this movie came out. So that just sucks for Craig. Sorry, Craig.
Yeah.
So Jake goes home and walks in on his girlfriend having sex with another man. And he is devastated, and he now needs somewhere else to stay. He tries to carry on with his life. We see him at interviews, auditions. We see him at acting class. And then he meets and befriends this guy named Sam, who has a place for him to stay, because Sam has been house-sitting for a friend, this rich guy, I think also in the movie business, in the picture business.
He's got one of my favorite movie props ever, the like bed that spins around.
Oh yeah,
it's good.
Yeah.
So
also I looked it up, the elevated circular house, it's a house called what was it called, the Chemosphere.
Ooh,
and it's in LA. It was designed by John Lautner in 1960, and it's like this like private historic thing. I thought that was so interesting, just like the spaceship in the hills.
Does it still exist?
Yeah, it's still there. It's a one-story octagon on the San Fernando Valley side of the Hollywood Hills off of Mulholland. It's just sitting there.
Let's go field trip.
That's why I sort of assumed it was like a model. I don't know, I would just was like, that doesn't exist. And I didn't ask any more questions. That's wild.
It was declared an LA historical cultural monument in 2004.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's the vibe. But I thought it was very interesting. There's like a, what's it called, like a little trolley that even brings you up to the house. I've never seen that in my life.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, does that, whoever lives there has to go on a little roller coaster trolley ride every time they want to go home.
Yeah,
it was wild.
That is terrifying. You're like, oh, that's like, that's very exciting, but then also when you're going up to a place like that, you're like, oh, this is where I die, like this is you know,
there's no coming down.
But no one dies in that house. They die in other houses.
No, they die in other houses.
So Sam has been house sitting for a friend who lives in this house, but Sam is about to go out of town for this 5-week gig he has, so he arranges for Jake to stay at this place while Sam is gone. So Sam shows Jake around the house, and he points out this telescope in the house with a view of a neighbor woman who dances all naked and sexy every night at the same time. And Jake is like, awooga! And he spies on her for a really long time.
Gets all foamy.
And the music is...
The music?
Yeah.
Loud!
The peeping music is so disturbing, like, because it's so happy,
right? Because it's like, ooh la la, isn't this so awesome that he's spying on her?
Yeah, exactly.
I've like seen arguments that like they're like, oh, I guess that like De Palma was accused of ripping off Hitchcock quite a bit because he did do that, like it was because he did it.
I mean, this movie is literally Rear Window plus
and Vertigo.
Like Vertigo. Yeah, exactly. But hornier.
But like some people have made the argument that they're like, okay, he had been received this criticism for so long that he's like, I'm gonna triple down and make it like,
oh,
I'm gonna make the worst movie ever. I like read a whole piece on The Independent that was like, body double is De Palma's ultimate troll, which to me, I like saw what he was saying, but I was also like, but sometimes you just make a movie that sucks and it's not like a game of 4D chess.
I mean, yeah, in retrospect, it's probably like, you can say anything, you're being a troll. You know, if something sucks, you can be like, I was trolling. Like, that's a good cop-out.
Yeah.
If you're called out on something. So.
That's my plan. I'm just like, yeah, when I make something that fucking flops, I'm like, yeah, that was supposed to, did I make you think?
I did that on purpose.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Right. Okay, so he spies on this neighbor woman for a really long time. And then later that night, he watches her again, but this time he sees a man in the room with her. It seems to be her boyfriend or husband. And Jake watches this guy hit the woman and then leave. The next day, Jake gets word that he's been fired from the vampire movie because the director doesn't want to deal with his claustrophobia. So he's even more down on his luck. And then that night, he spies on the neighbor woman again, doing her sexy naked dance.
And it's the same naked dance every night.
Every night, always at midnight.
The same
which
show.
You do get context for later, but it is just so confusing to me that the character of, like, he's just like, so he is a sardine, essentially, because he just like isn't asking questions that you need to be, even as like a perverted sex criminal. He's not asking very obvious questions such as, why is it the same routine every day? Like,
I mean, I won't get into like the actual plot, but I do think it's very funny that the plot rides on him being a creep. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he had to have started this all because the person knew he would look at her. Like, and that's the whole plan rides on this guy, like, proving that he's a creep. I just think that's...
And it goes off like nobody's business. And also, I feel like it also rides on... And it's like this... I don't disagree with this necessarily, like, but, like, also him being very certain that he's not a creep.
Yes.
Which is true of many creeps.
Right. Just like underwear in his pocket.
I'm not a creep. I'm a political activist. Right. There's like,
I'm a good guy.
I was protecting her. And then the detective who I'm like, are we supposed to agree with the detective? Because
I have a whole thing about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought the same thing. I was like, for the first time, are cops making a good point? And then.
But I think the movie thinks no, but. Yeah, we'll get into that.
It's a little ambiguous, yeah.
So he's watching, Jake Sully / Scully is watching the woman do her naked dance, the same exact routine as before, and this time he notices another creepy guy watching her from a distance as well. The next day, Jake runs into the neighbor woman on the street. They're like both at an intersection or they're in their cars. And he sees the creepy guy from the night before also stalking this woman. So Jake follows the woman, presumably to like keep an eye on her and like try to keep her safe, question mark. And she goes to this shopping center. He watches her go into a store, peeps at her while she's trying on a pair of underwear. And meanwhile, the creepy guy is still stalking her also. So Jake's kind of keeping an eye on both her and this other stalker. Jake then gets into an elevator with her.
Wait, hold on. Before they get in the elevator, I believe the first line a woman has in the whole movie is a woman calling security on Jake for peeping Tom.
Yes.
I think it's like over a half hour into the movie because we've seen many women at this point. We spent minutes at a time lingering on this dance routine. We see, like, there's a lot of Jake looking. I mean, the whole movie is Jake looking at women, and that's obviously on purpose. But even when he catches his girlfriend cheating on him, she just, like, stares at him of, like, oh, yikes.
Unfazed. Yeah.
Right. And then he just leaves. So she doesn't even get a line of dialogue. And then, yeah, the first time you hear a woman speak, it is to call security on him for being a peeping Tom on Gloria while she's getting changed in a fucking dressing room.
But also,
but he's protecting her. But you're like, what?
She leaves an enormous gap in the curtain of the dressing room, just like in the middle and it's like,
who
that's not a choice
hasn't
that anyone
done
makes
that all the time. Well, yeah, it's like the way that the characters are written in this movie are like completely irrational, but like I did think it was funny that it takes a half hour for a woman to speak and then it's just like, we need to get this guy out of here.
There's not a single crew member who's female or talks. There's not a single any even side character women voices. And I think because you see the woman in the store interact with the person he's stalking for like a minute. But you don't hear the conversation. So I was like, if we heard the conversation, maybe this would pass the test. But no, maybe not. Talking about underwear.
We're watching the creepiest guy alive, observing them having a conversation.
Yeah.
While staring at them. Oh, this movie is so bizarre. Don't love it.
I hate it. Okay, so Jake, so he's like kind of following and keeping an eye on everyone. He then gets into an elevator with her. But oh no, his claustrophobia. And then she throws her old pair of underwear away after she's bought this new pair of underwear.
Wait, I thought it was the new pair. Oh, she throws away the old one?
I think so, because she wears the new one out of the store and she puts the old pair in the bag.
Oh.
Yeah, it was a sniffing situation.
So he takes her old underwear out of the trash. Mm. And I do think he smells it, yeah. And I mean, not to kink shame, but he...
I was going to say, but it's like, but she... You can't do that.
You can't.
It was in the trash.
Steal someone's underwear from them without them knowing. God. Yes. So he takes her underwear out of the trash, and then he follows her to the beach, spies on her there, eavesdrops on her phone conversations, and then Jake sees the creepy guy again. The other creepy guy.
Yeah.
He gets so close. There. I was talking to Caleb about this over text yesterday. Where, like, in that scene where, like, he's watching her from, like, the tents on the beach, mm-hmm. and then she looks at him and the music swells as if to be like, she does notice him. And you're like, oh my God, what's going on? And then 2 seconds later, because honestly, I did struggle to, like, pay attention to this movie.
It's really hard.
I kept kind of getting distracted because there's all these long lingering shots where it's like creepy and nothing is happening.
Right.
So I looked down at my phone for 10 seconds and then I looked up again and he was like standing right behind her and she had no idea.
Yeah.
This is yet another example of like object of protagonist desire has no spatial awareness for plot reasons.
It's so frustrating.
Situation.
Yeah.
So he's on the beach now. He's stalking this woman whose name we will learn is Gloria Ravel pretty soon. He's doing exactly what the other creepy guy is doing, which is also stalking her. But Jake catches up to her and he's like, someone's following you. And she's like, I know. And he's like, but it's not me. And it's like, yes, it is. And also it's someone else. And just then the other creepy guy grabs her purse and runs off. So Jake chases after him, but the guy runs into a tunnel. And Jake can't keep going because of his claustrophobia. So the guy takes something out of the purse. We're not sure what yet. And then he runs off. So then the woman catches up, Gloria, catches up with Jake. And then they start making out.
For a while.
He just kisses her for a while.
It's uncomfortable. It's also like, it looks like it makes me uncomfortable, but they also look uncomfortable. Like, she looks uncomfortable, in my opinion.
Well, because she's saying, no, no, yes, no, yes, no, not here. Because she's, like, into it, we're supposed to think, for a while. And then she's like, right. But no, I can't, not here. And then she runs off.
I kept waiting for that to be revealed to have been, like, a fantasy.
Right.
Of Jake's. Especially, like, the more it's completely irrational when it happens, but then as the plot goes on and it becomes this whole like bizarro conspiracy Hollywood something blah blah blah, mm-hmm. like it makes less and less sense the more you know, because mm-hmm. the more you know, the more you're like, how does Gloria even know this guy exists? Like half the time he was peeping on her, it wasn't even her. Like it's right. So bizarre that she would want anything to do with this
with
guy.
This guy.
Yeah, I kept waiting for it to be like, the whole thing's a dream.
But she's just so horny. But like, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Every woman in this movie is so ready to have sex. It's, yeah.
Which, no judgment on that, but it doesn't...
But not with Jake Scully.
Like, why does she make out with him when he just like starts kissing? And like you said, I thought it was going to be a fantasy because there are other moments in the movie where he seems to be fantasizing about something. But like, it turns out not to be a fantasy. They actually kissed on the beach and for some reason she was into it for a while. She runs off eventually.
Ugh, it's so like the camera angle on that scene where it's like spinning around them. It's supposed to be really like sweeping romantic.
Yeah.
And like, so again, I feel like even the camera work and the music is leading you to believe that this isn't actually happening. But then it just was.
I thought so too. But then it just was.
Confusing.
Bad filmmaking.
Yeah.
Okay. That night, Jake spies on Gloria in her home again with the telescope. And he sees the other creepy guy in her house now. So he tries to call her and warn her. He runs to her house to help her. But the creepy guy attacks Gloria with a large power drill. and kills her. Jake breaks into her house to save her, but it's too late. She has been murdered.
I guess the power drill thing is a thing in Scarface as well. And so everyone was just like, okay, Brian De Palma is obsessed with power drills.
I don't remember that, but it's also been like over 15 years since I've seen Scarface.
I'm realizing I don't like crime syndicate movies. I find them very boring. Mm. But we will cover The Godfather someday on this show because I think it would be funny.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Someday.
Yeah.
We cut to the cops at the scene of the crime, and we meet Detective McLean, who questions Jake, and he's like, you're the only witness, and also you're a peeping Tom and a pervert, and I can see Gloria's underwear in your pocket right now.
That whole scene, we were talking about it a little earlier, but you're like, first of all, it's disorienting because the cop appears to be correct.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
But also, yeah, we're not supposed to, like, Brian De Palma's like ACAB the one time a cop is correct.
Yeah.
It's like so.
Yeah, exactly. Weird.
Also, in that scene, I feel like it just feels very 1980s that in that scene, and also very now, but like particularly with like the mask offness about it, the detective correctly says, like, peeping is against the law. He could have, like, he's like, I'm not gonna hold you.
He said sexual harasser or like sexual something. Like, he said, like, you're a sexual, whatever he said, but the guy was like, no, I'm not.
He calls him a sex offender, I think.
A sex offender, that's what it is. Yeah.
And he's right.
Yeah.
Then he's like, but I can't hold you. I'm like, but you literally can. You just correctly stated the crime he's committing.
Yeah.
And then later on, when like Jake calls him back and is like, talking of his fucking QAnon bullshit, the detective is like, oh, if it isn't Hollywood's biggest sex offender. And I'm like, just arrest him. Like, what are you?
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah. I just think at every turn, Jake makes it increasingly harder to root for him. You know what I mean? Like, he's not really someone.
For sure.
It's just, in the beginning, you're like, oh, I feel bad. This guy got cheated on right in front of his face. And then the more you go on, you're just like, oh, he's terrible.
I have a whole thing about that. Ugh. So the cop is questioning Jake, and this is when they start referring to the creepy stalker killer guy the Indian, because he appears to be an indigenous man.
I didn't even think about that. The first thing I noticed about the creepy guy is that they made him very ugly. Like his face was like melting off, and so I thought it was funny. Like, oh, they're making the evil guy ugly. Surprise, surprise. But then to call him like an Indian was so random to me. I was like, what? That's what you were going for this whole time? Like a tan, leathery man?
Right. It almost felt like the movie telling on itself, because I agree with you. It's an extremely offensive thing to say. And also, I was like, if they hadn't said that, I never in a million years would have guessed that that was what
exactly
they had been going for. So it makes it like twice as bad. And then it's like a fucking horror movie prosthetic. Spoiler alert, but like you don't have to watch this movie.
so we learn that. Then we see Jake watching porn, and he sees, because like the movie then just is like, well, this murder happened,
womp womp,
let's have Jake watch porn.
To get over it, to console himself,
because he loves peeping. He loves watching. So he sees a performer named Holly Body, played by Melanie Griffith, doing the exact same sexy dance in the porn film as Gloria was doing in her house while Jake was peeping on her. And he's like, wait a minute, why is that the same dance? So he goes and tries to get close to Holly, which he does by auditioning for a porn role opposite Holly. He gets the part. They do a scene together. And then Jake pretends to be this rich porn producer, and he acts like he wants to cast Holly in his movie.
And again, he's really starting to look like Bill Maher at this point, as you mentioned earlier, Shereen. It's starting to get pretty disturbing. And it's also like, I don't know. Jake sucks so bad as a character. Mm-hmm. But like, once he got to the point where he was pretending to, I was like, what is even his end game?
Yeah.
What is he doing?
The movie got so confusing for me at this point, because I just like could not follow the jump between this murder and then suddenly he's like, I'm a porn actor now. I'm like,
I couldn't follow his motive. Like, why is he doing that? I didn't understand at first. And also, I hated I really hated that they made him like into a good lover, because like she was like really into it, yeah. And just like I really disliked that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he also gets like 10 shades darker when he becomes this Hollywood producer, which I think is really weird. Like a Hollywood tan. Yeah,
he keeps getting creepier and creepier.
Yeah,
so he's like, yeah. I want to put you in my movie. I also want to hire you for a private performance. So she goes to this place where he's been staying. And then he's like, by the way, I'm not a porn producer. There's no movie that I'm trying to cast you in. What I need to know is, did someone hire you to dance in the house across the way? And she reluctantly tells him, yes, it was her dancing. And that Sam is the guy who hired her to put on this little show, knowing Jake would be watching it through the telescope. Mm-hmm. So Jake starts to piece together that Sam set up Jake to be the witness to this murder. He wanted Jake to watch the neighbor woman and hired Holly Body to be a body double for Gloria. And that basically Sam, whose real name is Alexander Ravel, aka Gloria's his wife, or no, her husband. He wanted to kill his wife, Gloria, so he made sure Jake witnessed someone else committing the murder so that no one would suspect Alexander Ravel.
Wild that this all kind of works out for him.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Truly. So Jake is figuring all of this out, but Holly is pissed that Jake lied to her and lured her there under false pretenses. So she storms out, but oh no, she gets abducted by the creepy guy, the murderer. So Jake goes after her to save her, and then he comes upon them in a reservoir. The creepy guy is digging a grave to dump Holly's body into.
How did he find him? He was like running on foot from the cops.
Right.
And suddenly he knows where they are. I don't know.
I don't know. That is a plot hole. So, but he finds them, and Jake scuffles with the murderer. And he turns out to be Sam, aka Alexander Ravel, wearing a mask of apparently an indigenous person, because again, they keep calling him the Indian.
Yeah.
But he's wearing this like fake prosthetic mask that Jake rips off of him, and it's revealed that he is Sam, aka Alexander Ravel, and that he had just been wearing this mask every time that we saw that character.
It's so confusing.
So then Jake ends up in the grave. He can't get out because of his claustrophobia, but then he has this like fantasy about how he's back mm-hmm. on the set of the vampire movie, and he's able to overcome his claustrophobia in that moment, and he's able to get out of the grave. But then Alexander's dog attacks.
There's also a very anti-dog agenda in this movie that I did not appreciate. Every dog, and also if you read the movie correctly, it is a good dog agenda, because all the dogs are like, let's kill Jake Scully. Let's get him. Mm-hmm. Let's get rid of him. He's dogs know things.
Yes. But the dog knocks the bad guy into like the water at the reservoir, and then Jake helps Holly out of the grave.
And the dog dies with him.
Right, the dog is just in the water now. Why? Maybe dead.
Yeah.
Not nice.
And then Jake helps Holly out of the grave, but she's like, "You're sick. You're a necrophiliac." And then she gets back into the grave and then just sits there, and he's like, "Fine, stay in there if
you
want."
That's how you know though. That's how you know you've really found a vile person, if you're like, I would rather literally hang out in this grave than go to safety with you.
Yeah.
So goodbye.
And that's how the scene ends.
Yeah.
Like that's how the scene ends. He's like, are you going to stay
in
there forever?
I'm going to chill in this grave.
And then, right. And then we cut away.
And she's like, maybe.
And then we cut away to Jake on set of the vampire movie. He has apparently been hired back to play the part. And they're shooting a scene where the woman who is in the scene with him has a body double for the shots of her breasts. So just when you thought there couldn't be any more male gaze cinematography in this movie, the movie ends with just a long shot of the body double's bare breasts.
The longest shot on a boob I've ever seen in a movie. Ever.
Truly. And then the body double and the actor in this scene who's playing opposite Jake is being murdered actively by this vampire that Jake is playing. So that's how the movie ends. and we're like, woohoo.
I do think it's funny. As a vampire, he has blonde slick back hair, so I think it's even more kind of Bill Murray, but with better makeup. But I also think you skipped over something. There was a scene that I had to replay, but it's the musical on the set of the porn shoot.
Yes.
There's like suddenly relaxed by what's, I don't know who's, it just starts blasting.
And it's the band.
It's
the band who sings the song.
It is performing so it.
Maybe
funny.
One of the only parts that I did like.
Yeah, I like that part. I was like, whoa, porn musical? Okay, I'm down.
But it's also confusing because you realize that it's part of the porn movie that is being shot that Jake is in, but that's not clear for a while. So it just seems like Jake is just like in this sex club wearing glasses.
And there's someone singing directly at him. Or like at us even. Yeah.
And I'm like, is this a fantasy? Is this, what is happening? Is this like him going to a sex club for research? Like, it's not clear what's happening. And then you're like, oh, I guess this is part of the porn movie.
Yeah.
Sure. But you don't see the cameras until the actual sex scene. So it's like,
right.
What?
That was anyway. The best little 30 seconds, though, or something. I really enjoyed the porn musical.
It is fun.
If I saw that without context for what the movie was, I'd be like, yeah, 100%. Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Looks like a cool movie.
Yeah.
So that is Body Double. Let's take another break and we will come back to discuss.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
And we're back.
All right.
So
where shall we? I think that maybe starting with a little bit of De Palma context will like kind of set up the rest of the discussion. Because I do feel like there are people who get, I mean, I feel like this is true of all like auteur directors. But like, I feel like this group of guys specifically, people really get, you know, their holes get all tense if you don't love it. Which we've been dealing with this for years, but I just wanted to like start by contextualizing where this comes in his filmography and what he said about the movie, because I do feel like it kind of like neutralizes any film boy like,
right.
It's actually good. I'm like, I don't even think Brian De Palma thinks that, but go off. So this movie comes in, like you said, Shereen, it comes right after Scarface. It also comes Within a few years of his other major Hitchcock ripoff, which is called Dressed to Kill. I haven't seen it.
Oh, I have seen that. Very Hitchcock ripoff.
So yeah. It's basically a ripoff of Psycho that there's been a lot of discussion around.
It's very problematic. You have to watch it eventually just to understand how weird it is.
Right. Like there's a very, like, it's about a trans person who is a psychopath murderer. So, you know, look, mm-hmm. there's been, that's a separate episode.
Michael Caine.
Right. That movie gets brought up in Disclosure, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. That's how I know it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, exactly.
So that's like the era that he's in at this time. And I think we should just cover Dressed to Kill at a different time.
Sure.
Because we don't really have the bandwidth for it today, but so that's like sort of where he, like, he's trying it, not to be like completely reductive, but it just seems like he's kind of going for like edgelord Hitchcock vibe at this right. phase in his mm-hmm. career.
Like post production code Hitchcock, where he's like, well, I can make a Hitchcock movie, but now really yeah. sexy and really like gratuitous mm-hmm. nudity and violence toward women.
It's like I could make it at any phobic you want.
Right. Transphobic, homophobic. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Misogynistic, whatever you want. It's, you can do that now. Not us, like, well, I mean, not advocating for the fucking production code, but like, this is like kind of was where he was at this time.
Yeah.
I feel like it's interesting where a lot of movies we talk about from this era are considered to be very sexist. In retrospect, mm-hmm. this movie was also considered very sexist when it came out, which I think is like kind of unusual, especially, I mean, whatever. We've covered a million movies from the 80s and 90s.
I mean, I'm surprised to hear that.
Right. Like you would, yeah. I honestly, I don't trust people from the 80s, but there was a big backlash to this movie when it came out. It was not a hit. It was not reviewed well at the time. So let me see. Okay, so Vincent Canby of the New York Times says De Palma, quote, again goes too far, which is the reason to see it. It's sexy and explicitly crude, entertaining, and sometimes very funny. And then he just says, like, it's a sexist ripoff of Hitchcock. So it gets like very, very mixed reviews. The biggest point of contention when the movie comes out is the drill scene, which we'll talk about, but like that gruesome a murder of a woman who we barely know and barely get to hear speak also bothered viewers in the 80s. It sparked a lot of feminist backlash as well.
But that was what bothered them the most? I didn't realize. I mean, I know it's bad, but if that's the one the thing that bothered them the most, it's kind of weird to me. But continue.
Yeah, that is like where the focus of most of the criticism. Like, there's a lot of people that were like, they lost me at the drill and not at the Peeping Tom shit, which I feel like is the
right. Exactly. Yeah, the drill isn't exactly like misogynistic per se. It's like gross, but
right.
I don't know. Whatever.
Okay, so, and then as far as what De Palma says about this stuff, I mean, he's like, I remember watching, this came out maybe like 5 or 6 years ago, there was a documentary about his work where he was interviewed. It was made by like Noah Baumbach.
Oh.
And he was asked about how he frames and portrays women in his work, because a lot of people, I think correctly, think that he's really bad at it. And
what
he now, so De Palma is kind of, well, I'll just read the quote, but like kind of deflective and like the sort of thing where you're like, you can tell when like someone's been asked the same question and they like maybe secretly know they're wrong and they're like, ugh, this question again. And it's like, yeah, you've never answered it. Okay. So here's what he said a couple of years ago to Entertainment Weekly about body double specifically. He says, quote, I've been dealing with this all my career. Fortunately, now Quentin Tarantino has to deal with it, so I don't have to deal with it anymore. Violence and women. He's the director who has the biggest persona in that area. In fact, we had a conversation about it once, which was funny. I say the same thing over and over again. If I can create a sequence where you're gazing at a woman or following a woman, it seems to me like a basic building block of cinema. I think it was Jean-Luc Godard who said, The history of cinema is men photographing women. I mean, look at advertising. Every magazine cover is a woman. It draws the gaze of a man and the gaze of a woman who's looking at what she's wearing. We look at women all the time. Look at the red carpet in Cannes. All they do is take pictures of women, and it dominates the coverage. It's so obvious to me. It's not something I discovered. Unquote. So I feel like he is like pretty blatantly like,
wow.
Yeah, everyone's sexist. And that's why I am. Like, that's kind of like...
What a good defense.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I just looked up... I went on his Wikipedia. I was curious about, like, his romantic life. Nothing weird there. But there is a quote that I'm seeing on his Wikipedia. Because he responded to these accusations saying, "I'm always attacked for having an erotic, sexist approach. Chopping up women. Putting women in peril. I'm making suspense movies. What else is supposed to happen to them?"
Yes, that's another one.
That's so unsettling.
He's extremely like learning about his attitude towards the subject, maybe like the movie even less. Because mm-hmm. I thought, like, I mean, there's nothing to be said for being openly misogynistic, but it is a little bit surprising.
Yeah.
To hear someone not even bother to make up a weird lie about it. I guess I appreciate that he's like, yeah, I'm sexist.
Take it or leave it.
But, and a lot of people take it.
Take it.
But people think it's like this reflective, self-conscious awareness thing. That's the thing. That is most of his defense.
Right.
From other people anyway. But
right. So yeah, like all the defense I was reading of this movie rests on Brian De Palma being aware of things that he is saying he doesn't care about. So I just feel like, you know, whatever, it's a movie, think whatever you want. It's not a particularly influential movie, and I'm happy for that. But yeah, I feel like he's basically given you all the information you need.
Yeah.
He's given us all the clues, Mr. Policeman.
Mr. Policeman, much like Jake Scully. So anyways, that's the context of the movie, and it made me really dislike Brian De Palma personally.
Seriously.
Yes.
Right, because so this movie can basically just be summarized as a movie about a man leering at a woman without her knowledge or consent, following, stalking, eavesdropping on this woman, stealing her underwear, like all this stuff. And of course, this lends to a lot of leering male gaze cinematography, mm-hmm. maybe more so than in any movie I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Which, like, you could argue matches up with the leering and peeping that Jake is doing. So that's why the choice is made. But, like, that just means, like, you just made a movie about a man leering, and that's...
You made a movie about a sex offender.
Right. And why are you doing that without making any actual commentary?
Like,
right.
You're just following a sex offender, go about a sex offender things. Like,
right.
A sex offender who is, like, certain he's not a sex offender, which the movie does not do very much to push back on. I feel like the most the movie does is have the detective repeatedly be like, "What's up, sex offender?" And and a few moments with Holly where she is correctly mm-hmm. like, "You need to get away from me.
Yeah, you're a creep."
But like, but I still think the movie is essentially like, I don't know. It seems like the movie is kind of behind him.
Definitely, because I think when the cop challenges him and calls him a sex offender and a pervert and a peeping Tom and all that stuff, I think this is the movie just framing the cop as being an obstacle for the protagonist, who we are supposed to be rooting for, more than the movie actually making any commentary on stalkery sex offender behavior. Because, again, this character who is stalking and peeping and doing all manner of other horrible things, this is the guy we're supposed to be rooting for. And even though he's doing the same exact thing as what the antagonist is doing, it's because Jake's intentions are like, quote unquote,
noble,
pure, and like to keep a woman safe and like all this stuff.
Yeah.
It's actually fine that he's a stalker, according to the movie. And like you mentioned, Shireen, like the movie does all these things to frame Jake in such a way that we are meant to sympathize with him, because he got his heart broken by his cheating girlfriend, he got fired from the movie that he's on, he has childhood trauma and claustrophobia, like all of these things that are there to make the audience empathize and sympathize with him. And he is like trying to save women in peril from this quote unquote evil Indian. And he's this, you know, quote unquote safe white man.
Right.
And there's a whole conversation to be had about that.
Yeah.
But he has these intentions of, oh no, I'm only stalking to save this woman from this other stalker. And that's what the whole movie is predicated on. And I do hate it.
Yeah.
The end.
I think, I think two things. One, he gets everything he wants in the end. So obviously it's like, you're meant to root for this person that like gets his career back. Also, Holly is on set when he is shooting this. So it's like, presumably they've made up.
Right.
Maybe they're even fucking. I don't know.
Oh, wait, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah. She was behind the camera.
She's there. Oh, yeah. Whoa.
Yeah. And the other thing is, it's not like novel, but two people can be creeps. And if one is ugly, that's the bad guy. You know what I mean? Like, I think someone not being like hideous and being white and like kind and quotes looking, like, I think that gets such a pass. And because the other guy is like hideous to look at, it's obvious to be like, oh, that is the bad guy. And I think that is where some people's wires get crossed, because they're like, well, that guy, he looks like a good person. He's trying to protect her. But if he looked ugly, you wouldn't think that.
Right.
I don't know.
And it's like, it's the Steve Buscemi principle.
It's the Steve Buscemi effect. And it's also like, I don't know. Like, again, I just don't see the argument for like this being commented on in the movie, because it's like, he wins in the end. And it's like, I don't know. I mean, I try to like engage.
He gets everything he wants.
Yeah. Like he ends up fine, even though. And then there's this kind of like bizarre, complicated like interaction with, once he gets involved in the porn industry, I feel like it's almost like conflating what Jake does, which is sex crimes, with the porn industry, where there are certainly ethical issues, and like there's, you know, plenty of reporting about how performers are not kept as safe as they need to be, and there's certainly a lot, but it just, I feel like, generally casts the entire industry as like hedonistic and debaucherous, and the same thing as being a peeping Tom, essentially. And like, that is like super reductive, especially when like Holly is like the only character of any gender in the movie who seems to have like a shred of dignity. Like, she's, I really liked when, because she's brought into Jake's life under false circumstances, like he is lying to her, but in that first scene where they go to the bar together after the shoot, she like states her like baseline right away, and she's like, this is how much money I make, this is what I will do, this is what I won't do, these are non-negotiable things. What do you think? And like, that's kind of your introduction to who she is. And so of all the things in this movie I fucking really don't like, I did like that she sees Jake for who she is, even if the movie doesn't share that opinion or whatever. And she also like knows what she is willing to do and not do. Like, she's very like firm in who she is. And again, it's like, it's interesting. And again, it's like, whatever, I know we can't say like what the movie's opinion is explicitly, but I liked seeing a porn star, you know, be portrayed as someone who is like in control of their life, and like, because that's like very often the case, and I feel like they're rarely portrayed that way in media. And but then every other character outside of Holly in the movie is not portrayed that way at all, and so you're just like, what? I liked Holly a lot. I didn't like that she appears to stay in Jake's life after, because like you're saying, Shereen, the last time you see her, she's hiding from him in a grave. So like, under what circumstances did they overcome that? I don't know. But I liked that she told him to fuck off kind of at every appropriate turn. But then the movie forces them together in some regard in the end anyways.
I think it was confusing, though, because at first I thought of it as a continuation of his fantasy, because it was like, because we had just seen the fantasy of him being able to do the coffin scene to be able to get out of the grave. And so mm-hmm. part of me was like, is this a continuation of that timeline or like what he wants? Like,
I wonder that too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the movie doesn't set up enough of a precedent for him having these fantasies, really, that it was right. clear whether or not that was a fantasy.
Yeah.
Because there's that other scene that we already talked about where we're like, is this a fantasy or no? Where he's kissing Gloria on the beach and that turns out yeah. not to be a fantasy. So I don't know. It's, so yeah. unclear.
It's confusing. It's and the way, okay, and then Gloria's character, as we've been talking about throughout, can't make heads or tails of what's going, like,
what?
Truly written to be
oblivious.
Yeah, just like a waif, like hot white rich lady who yeah. cannot. We were just talking about this, I mean, in a very different movie, we're talking about the 40-year-old virgin. But like a character who is like so aimless and underwritten and horny that they don't notice home intruders. Like
right
behind the door. She glides by him at every moment. He's just like, there's one moment where she answers the phone and he's literally like 2 feet behind her and she just doesn't see him because her back is turned. It's so bizarre.
It's the same thing with Jake when he's standing right behind her, like above, he's like mm-hmm. looming above her on the balcony at the beach shortly before they're making out for no reason. And you're just, that trope is really starting to bother me. Hot woman with no spatial awareness. And you're just like,
yeah.
Oh my God. That is like,
right.
Most marginalized people are like hyper aware of who's around them because yeah, you exactly. would have to be.
You have to be for your own safety. This is something that I've talked about a lot, especially in horror movies, where I feel like I'm victim blaming because I'm like, how did you not notice this? Or why did you do this thing to get you killed?
It's not a real person. It's a Brian De Palma person.
It's not right, but it's always characters, female characters written by men who are written in such a way that they're oblivious because it serves the story and not because that's how anyone actually behaves in real life. The same thing with like she leaves like an 8-inch gap in the curtain of the dressing room.
Yeah. Right. You wouldn't do that.
Not because anyone does that, but because the movie needs to allow Jake to peep on her as she's putting a new pair of underwear on. Like, I hate it. And I hate that I am doing this kind of victim blamey thing.
But it's not victim blamey if it's written that way, right? Like
right.
I think like the men are writing them in a way that they have experienced life.
Yeah. I still always feel weird about it, but yeah, it's like I'm blaming these female characters who don't actually exist and who are underwritten by men who don't know how women actually behave and don't know that we are constantly on guard for our own safety at every waking moment.
That we're terrified of them? Yeah.
Yeah.
That it's like not that we're terrified of them, we're actually in love with them, which is one of the fucking scariest things you can perpetuate in your mood. Like, I know a million people who have experienced shit like that, of like a creepy person who like is convinced that you know exactly who they are and you're just like playing hard to get, and someday you're gonna be together and it's gonna mm-hmm. be very romantic and cool, and it's like that is just like not really a thing that happens, but perpetuating it puts women in danger all the time. Like, I don't know, I've been in situations like that, like, and it's mm-hmm. it's always very, I can't believe that wasn't a fantasy sequence, like both from like a writing perspective and from like a Bechdelcast perspective. It is just like, what the fuck?
What?
Like, what? And it also, like, I don't even really know that it like moves the plot forward in any way for that to be true. Like,
it doesn't,
I feel,
do
like
anything.
The movie could, yeah, like the movie could play out the exact same way if that didn't happen.
Totally.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
but I think it added to this illusion or this lie that he's this like amazing lover that women want to fuck. You know what I mean? Like, I hated that mm-hmm. element of his character very, very much.
Right. Because it just it further just establishes him as a likable and empathetic mm-hmm. character, or a character who we are supposed to empathize with.
Right.
Because, oh, if he, look at him go, he's a sex pot and he makes women come. And mm-hmm. isn't that cool? And it's like, first of all, no, he doesn't. And secondly, he's a fucking creep.
Right. Like, yeah, it's just, oh God, I hate this movie so much.
It sucks.
It's so frustrating. And yeah, whatever. I'm trying to think of other, like, I mean, it's interesting because I feel like not even that much happens in this movie. It's 2 hours long.
No.
But there's just, it's all very...
At least an hour of it is just shots of Jake following a woman. Like, there's very little actual...
And then she's brutally murdered.
Yeah.
Which, Shereen, I agree with you. Like,
yeah.
Because I like, I mean, look, I'm a Saw franchise head. I like to see someone die in a brutal way. I don't like to see a character I know fucking nothing about, who I've never seen make a shred of sense in the entire movie, brutally murdered with a drill. But you also kind of don't see her brutally murdered with a drill. I think it is far more disturbing to see her followed around. Like, I felt more nervous watching her be followed for an hour by multiple people than watching her get murdered by a drill. And I don't think that's an unpopular opinion, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Because one of those things happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Peeping truly fucking terrifies me because you know it happens all the time. And
yeah. You could also say the drill is like phallic as well, which is also like another layer of like...
I'm sure some film studies professor is talking about that right now to his class.
Someone's just like, exactly!
I don't think this film even had a chance, or like gave itself a chance of passing... the Bechdel test. Like, there's the two women that we see in the movie. One of them is very like, has two words that she says, and the other one,
and then gets murdered.
It's just...
And then the other one isn't introduced until an hour into the movie, and she well, we'll get to this, but the other major topic of discussion for this movie is, and kind of going back to what you were discussing, Shereen, about the, well, one of these stalkers is quote unquote safe because he's classically handsome, and then the
is he
right,
he's not hideous. I don't think he's handsome, but he's like not, he's he looks like a good guy, like in quotes, you know what
right.
I mean,
right he's not being othered.
He has these like down slanted like puppy eyes or whatever. He does have like a kind looking face. He looks like a little dog to me.
Yeah
I don't know. And Bill Maher.
I think I'm just reacting to him looking like Bill Maher.
Yeah, that it is. It continues to be very distracting. But the audience is, he's framed in such a way by the movie, by the filmmakers, to be, you know, the handsome, safe white guy. Mm-hmm. And then the other stalker, who the movie telegraphs to the audience, is evil. And he's the stalker you have to be scared of. And then he is come to known as the Indian. And for a large chunk of the movie, we are led to believe that an unnamed indigenous man is a creepy stalker murderer, which obviously has very racist and harmful implications that, you know, like as a woman and as a white woman, especially.
Right.
That's the type of person that you have to be afraid of. These non-white strangers who lurk in the shadows. Even though statistically, and we've talked about this all the time,
not the case.
Women who are survivors of assault or who are stalked and murdered are usually done so by people they know, and often it's their own partners. Which turns out to be true in this movie because the Indian, quote unquote, is just her husband in a mask.
But the movie is like not operating on a high enough level to like be able to land that point.
Right.
It could have been an interesting point because I feel like that scene with the detective, there's just like so much going on there. But I feel like one of the reasons that he lets Jake go, other than the fact that he doesn't care about women experiencing harassment and murder, obviously, is that he is, you know, like many cops and just many people in general, he's like, well, normally I would go after the husband on this one, but you said that it was an indigenous man, and I believe that. And it's like, well, why do you believe that, even though there's literally no proof of it? Because cops are racist. And it's like, that could have been a point that the movie could have made, but it isn't, because it's like I kept wanting to think that this could be making some sort of commentary, but it's just like, it just never, ever was. Because when you hear that character being referred to as the Indian, it's accepted as a truth across the movie, across the cast, to the point where, like, even the guy wearing this mask refers to himself as the Indian. And so you're just like, okay, so this is just something that the writers of the movie believe is true. Like, it's not making a point that, like, this character is racist and that is why this is being accepted as the truth. It's just, like, perpetuating a racist trope.
But, like, you're right. They didn't give it a reason. Like, the movie as it is now, there is no reason he needs to be Indian. Not that he needs a reason, but if it was pointed out to be a larger commentary, at least there would be, like, an indication of why they even had to make him not white or something.
Right.
But the fact that it's just, like, sprinkled in and just presented as, like you said, like, all the characters think it's truth immediately. No one questions it. It's just so disturbing.
It's almost as if...
And they're like, the writers just think this is true.
Yeah, the movie is operating on the assumption that the audience will have no trouble believing that, some random stalker guy, unknown to the victim, is just peeping on her, stalking her, and then will later kill her because he is non-white. And it's just like,
which I'm sure in the 1980s would have been true. Like,
it's so the,
of just, I mean, I'm just speaking of, like, the racism of 1980s America. Like, I'm just saying, like, I don't even think that this would have been a particularly offensive take in 1984.
Right. And I think the movie is just operating on that. Well, of course the audience will be like, it was this.
Right.
Like, he did witness this, you know, this indigenous man murdering this woman, because that's how little audiences of the 80s thought of non-white people. Mm-hmm. So that fucking sucks.
I apologize for making us watch this movie. I just need to say that. I had no idea what this was about. I just thought it would be a fun ride. I mean, maybe it was worth it for that porn musical scene. But
no, don't apologize. I mean, we were going to cover it eventually, and
we've gotten this request a bunch of times. It's always kind of fun when we cover a movie from our popular request list and then we immediately realize why people have been requesting it, because they're like, oh, they're gonna hate this. You're like, oh, that's not nice. But we sure did.
We sure did hate it.
I mean, my curiosity is satisfied. I've been curious about this movie. I know what it is now, and I will forget about it hopefully in a week. You know what I mean? Like, I
fortunately I don't think this movie is gonna stick with me.
No.
Yeah.
Does anyone have anything else they want to talk about?
No, but I mean, to your point, though, it is nice to watch a movie that was not bad and then immediately talk about how bad it is with other people. You know what I mean? Like, it's, like, nice to, like, bash a movie and then move on, other than it sitting with you and lingering. Thank you for the podcast, is what I'm saying.
I love hating movies. I love hating movies almost as much as I love loving movies, so... Mm-hmm. I'm not mad about this. I love watching a terrible movie that I hated and absolutely dunking on it.
Yeah.
So
Melanie Griffith deserved so much better.
Truly.
Bless her. Yeah. And so this movie, like, this is also, I think, an entirely white movie.
Yeah.
On top of having a very racist plot point. I don't think I saw anyone who wasn't white in Los Angeles.
On the set, there's one black guy that drags him out of the coffin. He's like, oh, get rid of this person. And the black guy is just, like, obedient and follows the... He's like a crew member, which I thought was just like, this is the one person of color you put in here. And he's just like, I don't know.
Barely has lines. And then he's forgotten about.
So I just, like, this just feels like all the bad tropes associated with this era of filmmaking plus more, which is wild. I really hated this movie, and it doesn't pass the Bechdel test.
There is a scene where two women, and I think the other woman is named, it's that scene where Jake is with Holly Body. They run into the another party. Actor that Jake has met and worked with before. They do talk to each other about, like, a role, but there's a misunderstanding because Holly thinks that the other woman is another porn star. This other actor is a non-porn actor and thinks that Holly is a non-porn actor, and it never gets cleared up, but they do talk, and I would probably
I completely forgot about that. Oh no, does that mean it passes?
I think it might pass because they talk about, like, movies and acting and roles and stuff. A man gets mentioned, and they're also like,
I'm so mad that this passes.
But it's also like a woman who's we only see in that one scene. Also, you could cut that scene from the movie and it wouldn't really it wouldn't make a difference.
It wasn't like, essential. Yeah.
You could cut that scene.
Yeah. So it's...
I guess you could make the argument, but I still say it does. Also, based on vibes alone. Based on vibes. Sometimes you make a vibes exception.
Sure. Mm-hmm. But also, like, even if this does pass, it doesn't mean that the movie is like any better or a feminist masterpiece or anything like that. It just means that...
I know. I just don't want to give it anything.
True.
Just means that Brian De Palma gave one more woman three lines and called it a day.
He's like, and that's inclusion. And let me pat myself on the back about it.
Progressive hero Brian De Palma.
She has darker hair, so... Diversity is a woman with darker hair. That's what that is.
So that's the Bechdel. How about our nipple scale, where we rate the movie?
Oh, I forgot about the nipple.
Oh yeah,
we saw a lot of nipples in this movie too.
We do see a lot of nipples,
and yet I don't have any for it.
No, because we rate the movie on a scale of 0 to 5 nipples based on how we think the movie does when looking at it through an intersectional feminist lens. And I would give this movie 0 nipples.
Same.
Because of everything we've talked about, it's just a movie that sort of revels in a woman being stalked and peeped on and murdered. And again, more male gaze cinematography than I've seen in any other movie.
And that's like, that's a bar to clear.
That is a bar to clear.
It's all like leering shots.
Yeah, like the longest shot I've ever seen on a boob. Like it just, I've never had so much attention on a boob for so long.
And it is like a very like headless woman of Hollywood thing where even though we see that woman's face briefly, it does like tilt down to her chest and lingers there for a very long time. And then the whole rest of the movie is just a woman being leered at through a telescope, or a woman being stalked, or a woman being lied to. And that's the premise of the movie.
And it sucks because it's like, we have like, and this is not like an indictment against movies with erotic themes. There's plenty of like erotic movies that fucking rule. It's just like the way it's
bound,
framed, and who's looking at it. Yeah, we just covered Bound. That's an erotic movie. The fucking rules.
I like that movie. That's a good movie.
It's good.
That movie's really fun.
Yeah,
but it's like, yeah, it's all about like who is looking, what are they looking at, and is there consent implied? And in this movie, it's like no, all the way across the board.
So that sucks. And it's racist and 0 nipples.
Yeah.
And I hated it.
0 nipples really had an unfortunate time.
I want to give it a half nipple only for Melanie Griffith and like her. I did like her character.
Yeah.
It wasn't totally terrible, but that she's the only reason I would even consider giving this movie any praise. It's bad. It is a bad movie.
Yeah.
And it's so long. It felt it's so long.
It's very long.
And it feels longer than it is because so much of it is just like boring shots of a woman being like people walking and one person following another person while they're both walking, and it's like snooze.
The last thing I'll say is that De Palma did want a porn actress to play the part of Holly originally, which I think is like actually pretty interesting, but then the producers / studio were like, absolutely not, we won't release the movie, which is just another indication of the attitude towards porn actors at this time. But he did have someone in mind, and like I guess like had the idea for this movie when he was interviewing Janice Dickinson's body double from what's that movie that we were talking about that's really really transphobic and bad?
Dressed to Kill.
But yeah, he did want to cast a porn actor, but then Mr. Hollywood said, no.
I'm honestly surprised that in Body Double, Melanie Griffith's character wasn't written to also be in on this like murderous scheme, which is something that would have like further demonized, you know, sex work and porn work and stuff. And I'm surprised that didn't happen, which is just indicative of how movies like this, especially from this era, viewed sex work and pornography. And
then I think it is like a little complicated by the fact that, because Jake is so awful, but the movie doesn't think Jake is awful, and Jake ends up becoming a porn actor. So I feel like the movie isn't anti-porn, really.
Right.
Like, But that's like a fucking weird math problem that I don't really want to do.
Yeah.
Absolute last thing, because I thought this was funny. I was like, was this movie nominated for any awards? And I feel like there was some justice here, because De Palma was nominated for the Golden Raspberry Award for Worst Director.
Oh my God.
For this movie?
Yes. Huh. And Melanie Griffith was nominated for a Golden Globe.
Okay.
Hell yeah.
For playing Holly.
That is justice.
Yeah. So I was like, okay.
But this movie has like a 76 on Rotten Tomatoes, but it also
really
was a flop at the box office. So that makes me feel good.
Yeah. I don't think it's, I think it is like a hot take to like this movie then and now. and we don't have a hot take on the, I think we have the general take, which is that I don't want to ever think about it again. Shireen, thank you so much for coming back and bringing us this awesome movie.
Oh, you're so welcome, Jamie and Caitlin. This was fun though. Thanks for having me back. I'll come back anytime.
Come back anytime.
Maybe I won't choose the movie. But no, this was good. I'm glad that we got to vent about it, because I had so many, I had watched it last night and I was just like having so many thoughts, and I was like, what was that? What did I just see?
It is very cathartic to air your grievances about a movie that you hate.
It really was. Mm-hmm. And I feel like now we can forget about Brian De Palma for another 2 years.
Exactly.
And that's always a blessing.
Yeah.
Where can people follow you online and check out your stuff and plug away?
I'm on social media, Twitter and Instagram. My Twitter is ShiroHero666 and my Instagram is just ShiroHero. I'm making a very big effort and I'm doing really well at not being online very much. So I'm really out of the loop on a lot of things. But I occasionally post stuff here and there if I'm spiraling and depressed. So come along.
Join the ride.
Yeah.
You can follow us on those places as well, Instagram and Twitter at BechtelCast. You can subscribe to our Patreon, aka Matreon, where we do 2 bonus episodes every single month, plus access to our back catalog of over 100 episodes.
This month it's Minions March, baby, and you know what that means. We're covering Despicable Me and the 40-year-old Virgin. So it's actually there's 2 options. You can call it Minions March, or you can call it Gruella Steville, or you can call it Corella Steville, because it's Steve Carell playing fucked up people. Mm-hmm. So that's so if that didn't sell you on it, I don't know what will.
I don't know what will.
You can also get our merch at tpublic.com/TheBechtelCast. And if you guys don't mind, I'm going to actually have my body double switch in for the next episode. They sound exactly like me, but they're not me.
So it's like a voice double, too.
It's my voice double. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I look forward to meeting them.
Bye.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ+ bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.